Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Big Red Bench Women in Sport podcast. I'm your host, Ger McCarthy, and you can follow me on my social media, Instagram and Twitter accounts at GerMcCarthy74. This week, our entire podcast is dedicated to women in football. First up is Lisa Fallon, who is the first female football panellist on RTE television, covering men's international and Champions League matches. Next, we'll hear from former Republic of Ireland International senior women's manager and current FIFA women's football consultant, Sue Ronan. We'll also speak to former Cork LGFA senior footballer and current Shelburne FC and Republic of Ireland International, Saoirse Noonan. And finally, Cork City Women's FC's under-17 manager, Sarah Healy, talks about women in grassroots football and what's involved if you're interested in pursuing a career in coaching. That's all to come on this week's very special Women in Sport podcast. One of RTE's most highly regarded analysts, co-commentators and TV pundits, Lisa Fallon, has enjoyed an amazing football and media career. A UEFA Pro licence holder, the current head coach of Galway United FC men's first team and former Cork City first team coach, as well as former Northern Ireland senior men's international opposition analyst, joined us on this week's Women in Sport podcast.
Okay, it's a real thrill to have the first team head coach of Galway United League of Ireland on the Women in Sport podcast with us this week, and that is none other than RTE analyst as well, and quite a long number of jobs and very impressive CV with us today, and that's Lisa Fallon. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem at all.
An easy one to start with. Your background and your qualifications before we talk about coaching include a sports science qualification, and I was just eager to ask you, how has that helped you not alone with coaching but with dealing with players?
Yeah, I think, it's a long time ago now, Ger, that I was 1995 when I was at university. So sports science was actually a relatively new phenomenon at that stage. So I went to England to study sports science, and I actually combined it with English because I was worried that I wouldn't have a backup, so in case the sports career didn't take off. So, but from a sports science perspective, I think what it really did was it gave me an understanding of how your physical being transfers to what you're able to do on the pitch is probably the best way that I can explain it, in terms of, you know, the psychology, the nutrition, the fitness training methods, how different training methods apply to developing different skills, and the player's capacity to execute those skills, and then how players learn and how to coach skills and generate repetition, and how to help them to become really excellent at doing something. And I suppose from that, then because it was sports science, then it's how do you transfer that to soccer or football, because the application of the principles of all of those things are quite different for each sport. I wouldn't feel that I would be a very good rugby coach because I don't know the game, and I don't know the individual skills to coach them properly, or the particular strengths or weaknesses, like in terms of when our strength and conditioning coaches, how to get them to focus on the right areas of the player's physicality and stuff, to transfer that for them to be able to execute the soccer skills and the demands of the game that we want of them. So that stuff, I suppose, came, you know, early in my career, but it did give me an understanding of the relationship between all of those elements and the player's actual capacity to be able to perform on the pitch. And I suppose from that perspective, then it's individualizing it, not just down to the player themselves as a person, but also the demands of their position and all of those different things, because it really is different. The way a goalkeeper will prepare and train will be different to a centre forward or a winger. So it's just about having that understanding that when you take them out into the coaching sessions and the football sessions, that the sessions are actually designed to help them to perform at their maximum and execute the game plan that we want in any given game.
That experience, and that's fascinating, but that experience that you gained both as a player, both as a student, and eventually as a coach, took you to varying organisations, but all high performance units. I'm thinking Jim Gavin and the Dublin Footballers, Michael O'Neill at the 2016 Euros with Northern Ireland. Can you just kind of your roles with both of those groups and working with those people, how enjoyable was it, first of all, and how much in such a high performance environment, especially I'm interested in the Dubs as well, how demanding was it and fulfilling?
Yeah, I mean, it was brilliant. I mean, at the time, I actually started with Northern Ireland, believe it or not, back in 2012. So I had almost 6 years with them up until the end of 2017. And then at the end of 2017, I made the decision then, I had the opportunity to go in with the Dublin senior footballers, and I just felt I wouldn't be able to do all of it. So I had a chat with Michael O'Neill, and he was delighted for me to have that opportunity to go and do something different. And I still would keep in touch with him when he's at Stoke and stuff. But certainly, the Northern Ireland experience, I suppose, because I was working at Cork City, and obviously Cork City had a great rivalry with Dundalk, and, you know, we were the top two teams in the country. But what happened when I went to work with Northern Ireland was I actually learned and got exposed to a higher level of the game, because a lot of the players that we were dealing with were Premier League players or Championship players, and, you know, how different they were in terms of the speed they moved the ball, the physicality, their thought processes, their decision making on the pitch, all sorts of things. And it really exposed me to a new level of the game, a faster level of the game. So from that perspective, and then that was just working with the, you know, having the chance to kind of be in and around the Northern Ireland training sessions and stuff like that. But then once I started doing the opposition analysis, really, then you're looking at, like, we had I've done two World Cup qualifying campaigns with Northern Ireland, and then the Euros in between. So the first qualifying campaign, Portugal were in the group, and, you know, Ronaldo was in the team. In the Euros, Robert Lewandowski was playing for Poland. Poland were in the group. Germany were in the group, and Ukraine. So, and how you prepare for different games, and how you look at each players individually, and how you help to strategize towards what the game plan will be to negate those players or to expose them, or all sorts of different elements. So, but really, I remember being on the pitch when Portugal were warming up, and it was just like, at the time I was quite, you know, I was in my early years as an analyst, as an opposition analyst, and it just, to see the speed that he moved the ball, that Ronaldo moved the ball at, and the physicality of him, there was like an aura about him. And I really, it was almost like, it was kind of breathtaking and a little bit fearsome as well, like that you're kind of going, God, this is a different level altogether. And I knew straight away, if I was going to survive in that type of environment, I was going to have to up my game. I was going to have to see the game quicker. I was going to have to understand it at a different level. And so for those 6 years, like I said, across those two World Cup qualifying campaigns and then the Euros, it was brilliant, because you're analysing those players at that level all the time, and then seeing, you know, how do we prepare for that in training? How do we execute the game plan in the match? How do we have to make those little changes to the game plan during the game? You have to spot them early in the game to fix them, and all of that. And for me, being in that environment was an incredible learning curve. It was, you know, it was a low-key role, but I learned so much in those 6 years, just that level of exposure at that level of the game. And I think, you know, as across all of that, I was doing my B license into my A license and into my pro license, and at the same time obviously working with Cork City. So those experiences definitely helped me in terms of the coach I ultimately became, and how I saw the game, and different ways to look at it. And I think as well, when you work with different coaches, you work with them, you learn different personalities, different styles, and the same with every player and every group. The culture of every group is really different. And I would have found that again when I was at Chelsea. And also then, I suppose to pick up on your question about working with Dublin senior footballers, again, it was exactly the same thing, a different sport, but the winning culture, the winning mentality, the demand to be winners and to be relentless, and demanding excellence all the time. So to be in that environment again was fantastic. My role was kind of to have a look at that environment and see how could it be elevated or how could it be challenged and all of that. So and look at it through a different lens, I suppose. So it was a really interesting experience. I loved it. Again, brilliant people to work with, see the game through a different lens, and also see their game through see Gaelic football and try and see is there things that can transfer and all that. So it was really fascinating, and I loved my time there. I learned a lot in that environment too, but that's what I say, every environment you're in, you really have that capacity to push yourself on and be open to learning and open to seeing things differently. And then what that also does then is that allows you to have a look in the mirror and challenge yourself and go, well, I thought about that and that might have been my philosophy, but maybe there's a different way to do it, or could I add a layer to it, or could I take a layer off? And, you know, you're constantly challenging the way you think about the game. And I think that happens with every match I watch, or every match you're looking at the different managers. How do they prepare? How do they set it up? How do they change it? How do they teams react to different things? It's fascinating. And I absolutely love it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and like, there's two things that come to mind when I'm listening to you answer there, Lisa. First of all, your passion, your sheer passion for the sport and for the game. And the second thing is you're always learning. You've never stopped learning, which is why I kind of went back to the original question of your sports science qualification at the beginning. All those things that you've learned as a manager, as a coach, as a player in different environments, it's clear to me they come out when you're on television as an analyst, because you're one of RT's best analysts. But how much of your experiences as coach, manager and all those things, how much of that goes into the preparation for a typical television appearance, especially when you're analysing a specific game and opposition? Is it the same as it was when you were the opposition analyst for Michael O'Neill, or is it slightly different when you're on television?
Yeah, it kind of is, actually. I probably prepare for each game in a similar way to the way I would prepare. Obviously, you don't have to go into as much detail on TV as you would when you're preparing a team or preparing, presentations for players and stuff like that. But it would be, I think definitely there would be a lot of consistencies in terms of the way I would prepare. But at the same time, I think you can't, You have to prepare so you have the knowledge, but every game, you have to respect every game and you have to treat it for what it is, because the game, as soon as the first whistle goes in a game, the game is going to take you on the journey, not the other way. You're not bringing the game with you. The game takes you with it, and you have to be open to go wherever the game goes. And that's why I think you have to have your bank of knowledge and you have to have your homework done as such, so that you can interpret things that happen in the game in a relevant way. But I think the game very much, I mean, I've never watched the amount of games I've watched, I've never seen two games the same, and that's the beauty of it, is that the game really takes you on the journey and you're just there to kind of be part of it and almost give yourself to the game and see where it takes you. And that's a lovely thing, because you can do your preparation for the start of the game, but once the first whistle goes, you don't know where you're going to be at halftime, and you certainly don't know where you're going to be at the end. So you just have to go with it. It's brilliant.
Brilliant. And look, just finally, with your qualifications, and you've reached the very top level of coaching in this country, never before have there been as many young female coaches beginning their journey, looking to get their, first of all, their UEFA coach or their FAI coaching badges, and then moving on to the UEFA Elite qualifications. Somebody with your experience, what advice would you give to any young woman who is setting out on this journey? What are the kind of challenges that they'll face, and why is it worthwhile, Lisa? Because you obviously did it and you obviously enjoyed it, but why is it for somebody who might be considering becoming a coach, considering taking their badges? What's the real benefit of doing this? What's the best thing about it, but also the types of challenges that they're likely to face?
Yeah, I think if it's something you love, you'll always have the motivation to keep going. That's the first thing, regardless of the setbacks. And listen, I suppose my journey has probably had quite a few setbacks, but I would hope that some of the learnings from my experiences can can help the pathway for people, for other females that want to, that love this and love coaching and believe in this, and it's something that they really want to do. I'd like to hope that it won't be as difficult, and that there will be more opportunities. In terms of advice, I would say, you know, number one, never compromise your dreams. Definitely don't do that. I did. I compromised them and said, oh, maybe I should do this because I wouldn't be able to do that. And I'm a little bit sorry that I did that. But certainly surround yourself with good people. Surround yourself with people who tell you you can, because there's loads of people that will tell you you can't. Surround yourself with the people who believe in you, and who believe in your potential, and who will tell you that you can. And then just be yourself. Just be authentic, you know, focus on the role as opposed to focus on being a female doing the role. I think that for me was one of the most important things, was that I never saw myself as a female coach. I only ever saw myself as a football coach. It just happened that other people saw me as being female, which I can't help. There's nothing, if people see that as being different, that's their lens, not mine. I'm just there to do my job and to be a football coach. So, you know, I suppose that would be the one. And then I suppose the other one is, you know, it's a difficult era in terms of social media and all that type of stuff, you know, and it can be really difficult when people put themselves out there, particularly at the start when they're learning and they're developing. And the one thing I would say is, and it's a great piece of advice I've actually given myself, I wish I'd got it a bit earlier, but just don't take criticism from somebody that you wouldn't take advice from. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, people can be very critical, and it's easy sometimes to be critical rather than to look at someone and see what are they doing really well, and how can you enhance that experience. Because the one thing I've learned as a coach is that to never underestimate the impact that you can have on somebody's life. And I don't just mean that as a footballer or a player or an athlete, but as a person. And if you are going to have an impact on somebody's life, to make it a positive impact, be someone that they remember as someone who helped them and not someone who knocked them. Be the person that helps somebody or encourages them or gives them a lift, because it is difficult. So, yeah, I think that would be it. Like, and listen, as the challenges come, if they come, and, you know, just never be afraid to speak about them. And like I said, surround yourself with people who'll help and who'll listen and who'll give you good advice. And that for me is quite important. But never to feel alone. Always to have mentors or people who you can talk to, because there can and often will be challenges, and that's why I say it's really important to have good people around you who'll help you address those challenges and those setbacks, and that they keep giving you the you can message, as opposed to you know maybe you're better off knocking it on the head. You know, that's the easy route.
The Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
Sue Ronan is the former head of women's football at the FAI. A UEFA Pro License coach holder, Ronan managed the Republic of Ireland Women's International Senior Team between 2010 and 2016. Now a FIFA Women's Football Consultant, I spoke to Sue about her career and what the future holds for both Irish and international women's football.
Now, we're delighted to be joined by a Women's Football Consultant with FIFA and former Republic of Ireland International Manager, Sue Ronan. Sue, thanks very much for joining the Women in Sport podcast.
No problem, Gerard.
It's good to talk to you again. It's been a while, and since I last spoke to you, you have become extremely busy. Can you tell us what your role with FIFA involves, and what your how busy it is?
Yeah, so I'm a consultant now with FIFA for women's football. So effectively, I'm helping FIFA develop women's football right around the world, really, for, you know, any corner of the world. It could be a country in the Oceania region, or it could be a country in Europe, or it could be a country in Asia, whoever really is looking for support. FIFA offer a number of they offer support across a number of programs, development programs that are available for every country effectively in the world. There's 211 MAs, member associations, and they can all apply for support under any of these development programs, and they range from basically helping a country write a strategy for women's football, countries that would have very little, to maybe getting more girls playing through a women's football campaign, like festivals as such, or it could be at the higher end of the spectrum, helping them with league development, helping them introduce club licensing into their top league, or indeed through capacity building for coaches or administrators. So it's right across the spectrum. It's every area of the game. I would have worked at here myself in Ireland. So it's been great. It's challenging. It's really enjoyable. It's very rewarding. You know, you're dealing with countries who have very, very little. Some countries have very, very little, and you know, they just want help, and they're delighted to get that help. And I'm happy to share any expertise that I have. So it's very enjoyable so far, I have to say.
That's quite a wide-ranging brief for the role that you have. Can I ask you how difficult the global pandemic has made that in doing what you do, or has it just opened doors to meet more people online and through, I don't know, online Zoom meetings?
Do you know, it absolutely has opened doors, or it's enabled a lot more maybe to be done, I suppose, online. Previously, that support offered by FIFA, they had consultants or experts who travelled to each country that wanted that help. So you were, you know, you were on site maybe. You might have gone to into a country that wanted a help with a women's strategy. You were on site maybe for a week, you know, and trying to do work to find out, well, what exactly they have, you know, where they want to get to, how they're going to get there. And trying to do that in a week with them was obviously going to be a hard task. Now, obviously, there would have been further, you know, touch points with them probably in the weeks and months after that. But being able to do that now on Zoom, and, you know, doing that over a period of time and having contact on Zoom meetings, and, you know, sitting in front of the various people that you need to sit in front of on the Zoom meetings, it's really worked very, very well. Now, obviously, some things you can't do on Zoom. You can't deliver coaching courses, but you can certainly deliver you can deliver capacity building for administrators and such, and you can deliver certain elements of coaching courses, but you can't do the practicals and stuff. But look, it's really been great. It's been rewarding, and hopefully we're going to come out the other end of the pandemic soon enough, and then we'll be in a situation where we can actually travel to these countries and do the bits that need to be done on the ground.
Okay, so from a worldwide perspective, FIFA are clearly doing a huge amount of work to promote the game of football for young girls and attracting more women to play the game. In Ireland, from your experience of being the international manager, from being on grassroots level, how happy are you with the progress the game is making here and the pace at which it's happening?
Yeah, look, just certainly during my time in the FAI, there was huge developments made, particularly at the grassroots level. Over the 10, 15 years that I was there, we really grew the numbers hugely. And I think I probably mentioned this before, like the participation numbers went through the roof, particularly with the introduction of the Soccer Sisters program that really encouraged young girls to play and want to play the game. Then we implemented all sorts of different programs for girls, like elite programs for our underage, better talent. New leagues were popping up around the country. We had structures to cater for them, and indeed at the higher level, then the National League was obviously introduced, and then the under 17, and I know this year the under 19 has come in, and that's been in the pipeline for a while. So there certainly has been a lot done. Can we do more? Of course we can do more. I think more absolutely needs to be done. It's great to see now the profile around the league, and around the underage league, particularly the women's one. There's huge profile around it now. I mean, you can't open Twitter now without seeing previews or reviews or the games live or goals or whatever. And that's absolutely fantastic. And that should be the case, and needs to be the case, because that famous saying, can't be, can't be, you know, we want to encourage more players, number one, we want to encourage more interest, we want to encourage more, try to secure more brand, more partners, commercial partners, and then obviously then hopefully TV interest. It has to be visible, it has to be seen. And not only are you getting more players, and maybe you've got girls that might want to be coaches, who might want to be referees. So that visibility now that's going into the game is hugely welcomed. And it wasn't just from the FAI side either where it needed to improve. It also needs to improve in the general media. And I mean, certain sectors would always profile it, yourself, particularly Gerard and others like you. But I mean, the broader media, you know, they weren't doing enough for long enough. And it wasn't just football, it's every sport, women's sport. I think they're realising that now. And indeed, you know, you do hear the results of the matches being previewed on the radio even, and the results given, even on TV now on a Sunday night, you generally get them on RTA, whereas previously you wouldn't. So it definitely has come a long way, but of course we can always do more to improve that, you know, without a shadow of a doubt.
Very well said. And just finally, Sue, from somebody who's always been so passionate about the game, both as a player, both as a coach, your new role is far-reaching. I mean, we're talking worldwide. How have you adapted to it, and how much are you enjoying it, being a consultant, having been the player, the coach and the manager as well?
You know, I'm really, really enjoying it, I have to say. As I said earlier, I'm dealing with countries that have very little. And, you know, the thanks nearly comes out of the screen when you're talking to them on Zoom, you know, because they're just delighted with any bit of help or support that's been given to them to try and help them develop. I mean, they just want it so badly, you know. So I'm really, really enjoying it. Can't wait till all the lockdowns and the pandemic is behind us, and I can actually travel to these countries and be on the ground and meet these people and physically get out and help them, and of course get back on the pitch as well, because of course you miss that from playing, which is a long time ago now, but from the coaching piece is a little bit more recent. But certainly, you know, when I get to visit these countries, you know, I'll be back on the pitch in terms of doing coaching courses and stuff. But look, I'm really, really enjoying it so far, and I'm blessed to have the role. And yeah, it was the next step in my career, and I'm delighted with it so far.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
Saoirse Noonan is a former Cork LGFA senior footballer who is now fully focused on her soccer career. The former Cork City striker joined Shelburne ahead of the season's Women's National League and has made a hugely positive impact. Noonan was recently called up to the Irish International Senior Team by Vera Paw and came on the podcast to speak about her career, plus her new company, Freedom Clothing.
Now, it's a real thrill to have former Cork City and current Shelburne striker Saoirse Noonan on the Women in Sport podcast with us, and of course now also a full Republic of Ireland international. Saoirse, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ger.
Not at all. How does that sound when somebody says to you you're a full Republic of Ireland international?
It feels a bit weird, I suppose. It's something that I've been working towards for a long time now, and I suppose for it to kind of be true now and to be involved with the girls, even in the group chats and something, it's surreal.
You're not unfamiliar with the international setup from previous, you know, you've played underage and represented your country before, but the moment Vera Paw called you up and you got to go, and what was that experience like, finding out, and then the experience itself of going to Iceland and taking on the Icelandic team?
Yeah, it was all really quick, to be honest. The week leading up to it, we had our final league game, which was the first series of games. And then we were nearly in camp the next day. So I think it all kind of happened really quick for me. I didn't really get time to pop home and do the usual, chill out with the family. So it was a bit hectic. But yeah, look, it's something that every girl wants, and a moment that I'll cherish forever, and definitely memories that I'll hold on to for life.
Yeah, and look, you've been very serious about this as a career move. I mean, moving to Dublin, I mean, I won't say the comforts of, but you're a Cork girl, and moving from Cork and going up to Dublin, it's not easy at the beginning. I'd imagine there's a bit of a bedding in period, but you settled, or you seem to have settled very well at Shells, and things are going extremely well for you, because the team itself is challenging at the top of the table.
Yeah, I'm definitely a home bird, and I suppose moving up to Dublin was a step in itself. But look, the girls have been brilliant. All the staff have been brilliant. Noel's been really understanding and everything's that. That definitely helps, being a Cork girl coming up to the big smoke. But yeah, look, I suppose it takes time to find your feet in the first couple of games. I was still performing, and then as I started to move up and stuff, I kind of started to struggle a bit. But it's just a mindset, and I suppose I had to just change a few things within myself and just focus on my own game and not be worrying too much. And thankfully now, things are going well, and we've a big game this weekend against Piemont, so yeah, I'm going into that one again.
Yes, I was coming to that, because that is a top of the table clash, to put it mildly. Two of probably the most consistent and informed teams in the Women's National League. This is really where you test yourselves and you see where you are at in terms of how far Shelburne have come along.
Yeah, this is definitely where I want to be in my career, competing for the league and playing against the team and win. We know whoever gets the 3 points is going to be absolutely huge. So yeah, it's exciting. Last time we played them, we performed well, and I think we're still knitting as a group. And now we're kind of finding our feet more and getting our rhythm. We're creating a lot of chances, and we just need to put them away now, and hopefully Saturday will be a good day for us.
Can I ask you, is there anything specific on your own game that you've worked on since moving to Shells? You were saying there, like, obviously, you know, you struggle at a new club. Everyone does it in the beginning. But does finding your feet mean changing the type of game that you play? Because you're very good at holding the ball up and bringing everyone else into play, but you're scoring and getting into those kind of areas in the penalty area where you can do damage. How much has Noel King helped in that regard?
Yeah, Noel's been brilliant. I think when I originally came in, he kind of just said, do what you're doing and just try and enjoy it. And I always knew kind of tracking back to pitch was something that I needed to work on. I was good going forward, but I was always feeling that bit more of running back and chasing back. So that was something that I've worked on a lot. And then as well, Vera be ringing, giving us some tips on what I can work on to get into her Irish squad, which I've done so as well. So yeah, it's just all these small things just play a factor. And I've played a couple of games now with Chelsea on the wing, and I was kind of used to that from a bit with Cork City as well. So like everything's just a bit different, and you just have to do your little bit for the team, and then obviously work on your own few things outside training. But it's been more or less the same, just I suppose try to take myself to the next level then and push on.
I would imagine when you're dealing or speaking to somebody like Vera Paugh, consistency is the kind of word that she's used in previous interviews about all the players in the Irish squad. She's looking for consistent performance from the players that want to play and represent Ireland at the highest level. I guess that's something that you've brought into your game and you're hoping to continue to do with Shelburne.
Yeah, I think we all want to go out and have a brilliant game and score 2 or 3 goals every game, but the reality is you're not always going to be on top form. So I think it's the games that you're kind of struggling, or you might have had a tough week, are the games that nearly matter, because it's how you go out and show yourself on those days, because those are the days that will matter to you in your career when you're not feeling the best. But you need to still try to find a performance in somewhere and grit it out and work hard. And everyone always says hard work will be talent, so that's something that you just need to find, and that I've definitely been looking for, and that will make you the best and make you as consistent as you can be.
I have to ask, because most of our previous conversations used to be around the Cork senior ladies football team. I know you're keeping an eye on them, and I know that you've made a career choice, but you probably watched them through the league campaign and playing Dublin the other night. What did that feel like for you watching on television? Because it wasn't that long ago you were out in the Croke Park pitch yourself. And do you miss it?
Yeah, definitely. I stay in contact with most of the girls every week, asking them how they get on in training and stuff. It's probably not good for me sometimes, because I never get too emotionally attached, but it's something that I'll never let go, and I'll keep an eye. Even when we were in Iceland, we'd be sitting down watching a bit of the GAA with us and Donegal v Cork, and it was on the big screen, and we were all watching the caravan too. So everyone loves GAA, look, and it's always going to have a big place in my heart. And I watched them again against the Dubs, and I suppose knowing that you have made my choice now, and I can't affect them and help them, is a bit frustrating at times, but it's something that I'm grateful for, and I've got the rewards now, and I've got what I wanted. So I've broken to their shoe, and now I can just keep working hard and that staying there.
I have to ask, what did Vera Paugh think of ladies Gaelic football?
Yeah, sure, I suppose she doesn't know the rules quite well, but I think she didn't say much. She just kind of watched a little bit and asked a few questions, and it was nice to see that she wanted to learn our sport too, and that's great to see from a manager again. And we've talked a lot about GAA and me making my choices and how it benefited me and stuff. So yeah, she definitely, I think, enjoyed her couple of minutes of watching that night.
Interesting, good stuff. Just finally, on the pitch, look, it's great to hear that things are going well for you, Saoirse. You're obviously working extremely hard, as we know you would, but to get your career up and running and or to even improve it. But off the pitch, tell us about Freedom Clothing and what's involved there.
yeah, I suppose last lockdown, with no training, I was usually training on the pitch at least 5 nights a week. If I'm not training, I was watching the session, and I have two games every weekend, so there wasn't much time for a break, and I suppose I kind of didn't know what to do with myself, and I was just training in the mornings myself, and I had all my evenings free. So I just kind of was doing a bit of coaching, and I was just thinking, imagine if I had my own clothing line, and just my cousin had years before, and I just kind of contacted him and said, basically, help me set it up and see what happens. And it was just kind of a lockdown experiment and a bit of fun. Put my savings aside and said, if I blow it all, I blow it all. If I don't, brilliant. And yeah, look, I'm still here ticking away at it, and it's enjoyable. It doesn't feel like an extra bit of work because I enjoy doing it. And when I see people wearing stuff that I've designed and stuff, it's amazing as well. And it's definitely something that I will look at doing when all my careers end. I hope that's a long, long time away. But for now, it's just enjoying it and learning and trying to be a little bit of a businesswoman on the side as well as college and everything else that's going on. But yeah, it's nice.
Brilliant stuff. And where can people find out more about Freedom Clothing?
Yeah, we have an Instagram page. It's freedom_official_clothing, and we have a website up and stuff, and you can just pop on there, and it's quite straightforward how to purchase. So, also quite appreciated.
Missed the show? Grab the Big Red Bench podcast at redfm.ie. Cork's Red FM.
Sarah Healy is Cork City Women FC's under-17 manager. The young coach and manager joined us on the Women in Sport podcast to talk about females coaching in a male-dominated sport, as well as Cork City's chances of success in this season's Women's National Under-17 League.
Now, we're joined by the Cork City Under-17's women's manager, Sarah Healy, who you will hear from the background is very, very busy at this time as we conduct this interview. So I'm really appreciative of her time. Sarah, thank you for joining the Women in Sport podcast, first of all.
No problem at all. It's a pleasure to be on.
Thank you. Can you explain the excitement and drama that's going on behind you and what's happening?
Right now we're running our Cork City camp down in Connacht, so we have all the kids in the background playing their matches.
How many kids, and God bless you for doing it?
We have 50 kids. So, yeah, they're all running around here enjoying the sunshine.
Good stuff. Well, that's great to hear. Sarah, you're the Cork City Under-17 Women's Manager, but you have been involved in coaching for quite a long time. First of all, what's your background in terms of why did you get into coaching to begin with?
I suppose from a young age, I've always played the game and I've always watched the game and loved the game. I wouldn't have been the best player myself. So I found a passion then in teaching the game to others because I had a knowledge for the game and I could understand it. Just wasn't the best player myself, but was able to coach it better and teach it.
What kind of qualifications have you acquired thus far?
I'm up as far as my UEFA B licence and on my UEFA A licence course.
Can you give us an idea roughly, of not necessarily in hours now, but the amount of time and effort it has taken and why the course is so popular?
As in why the A licence is so popular? Or?
Yeah, just in general, all of those courses that you've undertaken, because most of the coaches that we interview, they've all undertaken the UEFA licence course at some stage. But just for people who may not have even thought about taking one up or might take one up in the future, why would you recommend it?
Oh, I'd recommend it if you want to get a knowledge of the game and an insight to the game at a higher level. It's really good. They go into the details, the hours of the video analysis, the hours of like all the other sides of the games that you wouldn't think of. Other than just the game, it's all involved in the courses, and then the people you meet on the courses as well is like something you can't replace. That the people on your course is always a good, like, stuck for words now.
Okay, no, it's just a good experience for you, basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
On those courses, and whilst you've completed them, have there been many women taking part in or taking up those UEFA B or UEFA C licenses even?
Not on the courses I've been on. On my A license, we've had one other female participant. On my B license, I was the only female participant. And then up through the other levels, there had been one or two on C licenses and Kickstarts, which is now PDP1s.
Okay, so there's no reason a woman can't take up this course. Why wouldn't she be able for it? So what would you say to other women who might be thinking about it, who are involved in football and might want to go a little bit further with their coaching?
I would definitely say get involved and to apply for the courses. There's been the female-only B licence that's been run, and I know a few female coaches that are involved in that, and that I would highly recommend that. But I'd also highly recommend just doing the course in general, whether it's with the females or only with the male courses as well, because you learn a lot from the people on your course.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that. I mean, obviously, there's quite a lot of, it's academic, you have to do a bit of study, but it's what you, I would imagine it's what you pick up on the pitch and what you pick up from other coaches, which is invaluable.
When you're just having the conversations, even at your lunch in the football conversations, it's that kind of knowledge, that those things stick with you as well, those little conversations with people on your course.
How much of what you took or learned in those courses have you been able to transfer onto the training pitch with Cork City Under-17s?
A good bit of everything I've really learned, I suppose, and through experience then as well of doing things, you're definitely able to implement everything you learn from the course with video analysis and the tactical side of the game. Yeah, so like everything you've learned from like the use of a tactics board to how to present stuff to players and stuff like that, that would all come into play then when you're at your sessions with Cork City as well.
You're clearly passionate about coaching. It's something you enjoy doing, Sarah, and it's obviously something you've taken on now as a manager of a team with Cork City Under-17s. You got off to a fantastic start this year against Treaty United.
Yeah, so we played Treaty United in our first opening game of the season this year in Bishopstown, and we had a 3-1 win, and it was fantastic. And obviously, Alicia's goal then to seal it, the 3-1, was phenomenal, and that great advertisement for the women's game to get that tweeted and watched so many times all over the world.
Yes, I've seen it on social media. I was just coming to it. Is that down to your coaching?
No, I can't take credit for her left foot. No, she had a good left foot now, to be fair.
Fair play. And Sarah, just finally, obviously you love managing, you love coaching. I mean, you're coaching even now in between doing what you normally do with Cork City. It's something you want to continue for the rest of your career and move up through the ranks, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely something I'd want to stay involved with. I just have a great love of the game and think that I've able to pass the knowledge on to the younger ages and give them the best experience I can at their time with 17s.
That's it for another Big Red Bench Women in Sport podcast. Remember to subscribe to the Big Red Bench on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also listen online at redextra.ie. Don't forget to tune in to the Big Red Bench with Rory O'Hagan, Colm O'Sullivan and Valerie Wheeler between 6 and 7 p.m. on the radio every Saturday and Sunday. Follow the Big Red Bench across all our social media channels, as well as visiting our official website, redfm.ie.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.